With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Hello, welcome to True Hoop with me, Gerard Hector, and Henry Abbott. How are you, sir?
I'm so excited. We're talking to like a legend. Okay, so the early days of True Hoop was like early days of just basketball on the internet, and it was a crazy time, but I felt like we were all kind of this like band of brothers, and like one of the people in that group was Rod Benson. Hi, Rod. How you doing?
I'm good.
Rod was like making the NBA. He was like on the cusp. He's like a 6'10", if I'm right, like went to Cal and was like sniffing around the NBA. But the same whole time he was writing like the best blog on the internet of just like crazy shit. Like just like what was really happening. And it was like, I think it was for me, it was kind of like a sports fan's dream of like the account we would get of like what the basketball world is like. But somehow we've never met. Like, I think I probably linked to your blog 5,000 times. You worked all over, right? You worked at like Draft Express.
Yeah, and you had my boy Coleman Collins write something for you a while back too. And I was like, oh dang, like I thought we were boys. I can't get the first call up. Like, it's actually funny that you say like,
well, Coleman came to my house. He's at dinner really? With my kids. Like, yeah, come on over, Rod. You got to come over.
He actually lives down the street. But I don't want from you to be behind. Now, so I guess everything's full circle.
Small world.
It's crazy that you say it was like, because people are listening to this and they're thinking, this guy wrote something absolutely bananas. And I'm here to say, no, my funny MySpace messages, which were just like, hey, you're a little too ugly to talk to me. Like, this is weird. And then it was like, oh man, we're in a bus for 9 hours and everyone had to take, you know, dumps halfway through the, it wasn't crazy. It was just actually what was happening.
So I remember a few that I was trying to rack my brain. Okay. For some reason, I really remember, like, I'm pretty sure you were in Bismarck and playing in what was then called the D League. And like, I think you just went to Walmart because that was like the most fun thing to do.
That was Bill Simmons.
That was Bill Simmons?
What the hell? It's crazy to think about in retrospect. We watched the national championship game between like Memphis and who played in that game? I don't know. The one with Derrick Rose.
Kentucky?
Yeah, it might have been Kentucky. Like John Wall and we watched that bar in North Dakota. And I didn't contextualize. This guy really like gave up his like he's one of the guys who would be there. Instead, we're at Walmart, we're at the bar because there's nothing. I think he thought there was something even a little to do in North Dakota. And I'm like, really? We can go to the Walmart or we can go to the bar. It is winter, sir. There's nothing else.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
And then I remember the whole NBA got super upset when I think the Heat cried when they lost in the finals. Maybe LeBron cried or Dwayne cried, I forget. And you were like, come on. And everybody was like, not sure if you were allowed to say that they cried or something, but you were like, motherfucker, I cried all the time. You know? what is the big deal?
That was the LeBron like crying meme, right? He's in Miami. That was like 2012. And at that point, I'd been in Korea for a few years. If you watch even Japanese baseball or like any sort of Asian like athletics, they cry after everything. They also give everything. So it's like kind of expected. So then you turn on the NBA and it's like, I'm sorry, they cried after the finals and we're all like, boo. Like, it's so nuts to me how we built up like that our culture is the culture.
And so you've had the experience, Rod, of playing all around the world. Right? Basketball's literally taken you everywhere, and you've got to experience.
It's huge in Korea. Huge in Korea, right? Is somebody saying huge in Korea?
Big in Japan, huge in Korea, whatever the old saying was.
I'm huge.
Final Tam has Japan.
Huge.
You got Korea.
But you've seen the different cultures and how they react to sports. You know, give us a little bit of the beyond the emotion that you see. Some of the differences you've seen overseas playing that come in stark opposition to the States.
Man, I wouldn't say anything's in stark opposition. I would say everything's in phases. And the more money something gets involved in any league, the more you're going to see that game shift. The NBA has, like, people don't pay attention to how, like, all the companies that have grown along with our economy, like, now it is starting to crash. they all grew kind of, like, really fast. And the NBA, to try and, like, capitalize on that, just relaxed everything I care about in the game of basketball. But then you go to Europe, and it's like a lot of those things are still there, but my God, the jersey's still like a wall-to-wall advertisement. they're trying to figure out how to monetize this thing so that enough people can eat. And like, the smaller the league is, honestly, the purer the basketball, because there's not enough they can add on to it.
Yeah, yeah.
There's not like big forces. So, okay, after reading you for so long, you have written a book, which is called Different Dude, which is actually a very perfect funny title. Perfect title. Like, can you talk about why that title?
Yeah, it's just one of those things where I think as a basketball player that you've interviewed a lot of guys, like you said, when we were off camera, and like you kind of get similar answers because people are kind of programmed to see something and be like, we all agree. And like probably 30 times in my career, everyone agreed, like, he's a different dude. Like we all want to go left and he's talking about right. And I'm like, but guys, right? The first time I heard it, I think I was, we had these things called TAM meetings, team awareness meetings. Doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. But they were,
wait a minute.
They're bringing some former NBA guy to like talk to the D-leaguers about like nutrition or money or whatever. And one of the early ones, it was us and another team. The guy gave this big, great story. And he's like, who here knows what they want to do after basketball? I, like everybody else, did not raise my hand because I was 22. Like, I don't know. But everybody looked at me. So then he looked at me and he's like, what? Why are you guys looking at him? And someone's like, he's a different dude, man. He already figured out his whole life, man. He could probably build a rocket ship right now. Can't launch it. I'm like, what are you? I don't even know this guy. We've never played.
He built the right guy. Got his own rocket ship. I love it. I love it.
Yeah, I want to feel really bad for you, Rod. Like you got singled out there. But can you just tell us the little story of when people tried to steal your backpack? And what did you ask for? You know what I'm talking from your book.
You just highlighted something.
This might be the kind of thing.
That's a tragic story that I'm like, it's also just laughable. Okay. Like, but I had this TI-83 plus calculator.
Yes, everyone knows that for math.
And they had games on it that everyone had. And one was Drug Wars. And I thought that this was like the bee's knees. I was like, whoever did this has really tapped into something with me. And I wanted to make my own.
How old are you at this point? You're how old?
I gotta be like 16. Okay. So I make my own, but it basically means I'm on this thing all the time. So when, that day, I not only hurt my like thumb or something playing in a game, I was still on the calculator when everyone else went out to eat. And when they went out and came back with those burgers, those delicious burgers, I was like, I gotta go. So I'm coming back and three dudes jump out of the bushes like, literally just like exactly what you expect it to look at, like almost like the movies where it's like, oh, this is lazy writing. They were lazy writers.
lazy writing.
Literally, give me the backpack. Like, so lazy. Looking back, like, they could have had a little bit more imagination. Like, hey, the backpack. We'll take it. Like, no, give me the backpack. but where it takes a funny turn for real is that I thought my calculator was in the backpack. So while they're going through it, I'm like, do I ask him for it or not? Like, Can I get my calculator, please? I need it for school. And they just let me go through my backpack to like find this calculator, which also was not in there. It's weird being like scared for your life and embarrassed at the same time. Like, oops.
Yeah.
All right, we can all, you win, I win. We all went our separate directions.
You love that calculator, though. I mean, you love that calculator. That's what I take.
And it wasn't lost. It was still in the hotel room. So we kept on playing.
Well, Henry, then they took your backpack back. You completed the
trip. No, they kept the backpack. Once it was calculator was not in there, we both decided this has gone on long enough. This can't get better as it goes.
You guys all, everybody respected math in that story.
TI-83s were expensive, man. Somebody stole that from you. It's a real problem. You got to go tell your mom. I need another whatever it costs, $100. But she's like,
man, we were the broke black family. Like, I don't know how I procured this calculator. I damn sure couldn't let it go. My mom didn't buy me this calculator. I might have stolen it. I don't know. Like, I needed the calculator. It can't get stolen again.
Cannot. No. Rod. Oh my God. Sophomore year at Cal. Okay. So you just decided one day, I'm going to slap the shit out of a teammate. Like, I'm like, this guy, like, you watch the Chappelle show, he wakes up one morning, you know what? I'm just going to practice. I'm going to slap. And wait, and the thing that makes it so crazy, you're late to whatever's going on in the team facility. People are quiet having a meeting. You tap a teammate's shoulder to say, hey, he turns around. What's going on? Whack! What the fuck? And another fight ensues. My man, what was going through your mind?
It was immediately dumb. So, but there's a reason I led with that story, like in the book, right? I mean, it's not the most out there story. It's just very out there.
No. Nope.
But it's because, like, that's, I don't think people get that's how kind of dumb you have to be a professional athlete at certain points.
I was,
like, I was so,
go on, like,
whatever, rational that I couldn't be good at basketball. And I think a lot of the guys you see are the best. Oh, you got that dog in. I'm like, that's irrational. I don't want to have that dog in me while I'm at Chili's. I don't want to have that dog in me while I'm on the platform for the L train. It only applies in one space. So only like kind of weirdos develop it. I was showing you, like, I mean, if other guys would tell their truths, I bet they all have something similar, like something where, like, it doesn't make sense. Like, the other person would just take it as bullying or like, what the hell? Like, but no, someone told me I got to find that dog in me. And now, and for me, it was just, it's such a low bar thing to do, like a hard slap, like literally with his stomach, like push him down. It's a full wind down.
I'm like, you're a man now. Yeah.
But that unlocked you. You started playing incredible ball after that slap. Like this weird thing where these, the field, the arena of athletics, it rewards to your point, this irrational, ridiculous behavior that unlocks something in you. Talk more about that.
Man, I'll say this. If you believe for a second Draymond Green hasn't slapped like his like little sister or something, not his sister, that's too far, but like his brother or something, like, because you see it on the court. That's when he's in his...
punched a teammate in the face.
That was just on camera. You think he had punched Jordan Poole in the face before? These things, come on, man. Like, and especially in training camp where everyone's watching practice. It's when you get like mid-season where no one really is paying attention. They all know what's going on. All I can say is this. Even with that slap, and I was known as like a kind of a more wild player throughout my, especially in Korea, I was never the crazy one. Like, not even close. In fact, the reason I lasted so long, especially when I went overseas where the cultural expectations were different, is because I was not the crazy one. You know, I mean, guys have been kicked out of Korea. Like, bruh, Ivan Johnson. Do you know who Ivan Johnson is?
Yeah.
He's like, I think he's the only guy to punch a ref in the face out there during a game. Like during a game, like the footage is online.
So it looks
like
on. It looks getting...
like bullying. Like
that was not a charge, damn it!
But it's because like it's actually crazy when the culture shifts and you have this dog in me mentality. It almost only exclusively works as like making it to the NBA. Once you go, like they used to say in the D League, like, man, overseas ain't for everybody. Oh, you're going to overseas, like. Because you can't take that everywhere. You're going to have to actually learn basketball to some certain point and, like, use both. And a lot of dudes, like, don't have that. Don't want to have it.
Well, when I read that book, Thinking Fast and Slow.
Have you read that?
Do you know what I'm talking about? Okay, so it's probably here somewhere. This guy, Daniel Kahneman, won the Nobel Prize for this, like, brain research. And basically, like, most of our feelings are, like, either super quick, like instantaneous, very useful in basketball, or they're rational and slower, right? Or now it's like, what's the optimal kind of car for me to buy, right? Like we kind of have two systems, right? And it seems like as someone who played very low level, I mean like very low level basketball, it was clear to me that I was like too thoughtful, you know, like my forte was not the boom, you know, just like the ball's here, he's going there, you know, like I could beat my guy and get in the paint. And then it was like a lot happened, you know, like other players could like read it way faster. Right. That was like more emotional. And I'm thinking they were also more likely to deck a ref. Right.
Well, it just
like,
depends on how you're raised and what you've been conditioned to already.
Yeah. I mean, I wanted to deck a ref.
The best players really just do both. They are both at once. And everyone else has some level of degradation there or like athletic degradation. But now I went to Torrey Pines High School. It's as white as white can be. And we ran a Princeton system, which in high school beats everybody. It just beats everybody. Yeah. If you can figure out how to do that. But none of those guys could play past that because they are locked into rules. They're rigid. And frankly, what makes basketball beautiful is the mix of the rigidity and the fluidity. And some people just can't
like jazz.
Do it. I like that's what I'm saying. To learn that fluidity, I had to slap. I had to do something so irrational. It's funny, but everyone has done something like that, and maybe they just forget because they were 6 years old. But you're not born with whatever I have in my brain now that can do that.
Have you ever coached?
No.
If you did, would you advise? How would you advise on this matter?
Slap the shit out of it.
I think that I was... The reason why I even said, like, you might be 6 years old, you might not know, you might, like, there's so many ways to learn anything. I think that there's general ways to learn that same lesson. I had a podcast a couple of years ago with Terry Porter. We were talking about,
He was my favorite player growing up.
Portland legend.
Literally my favorite player growing up.
He came on my podcast because my friends, like, I don't know, they're like family friends or something. So we're talking about, you know, I asked him if he thought the way Jordan, it was around the Last Dance time. If Jordan was, if it was necessary for him to do all that stuff. I think then the Last Dance was super favorable, that he was actually more of a monster. And Terry Porter's like, yeah, you need that. You need that to get, and I think if you're born like before 1970, you probably really believe that. But what I told him is I was like, look, in the last 30 years, there's been basically five champions, the like Jordan Bulls with a couple like random outliers, the Tim Duncan Pistons, the Kobe Lakers, the whatever team LeBron's been on, and the Golden State Warriors. This was like a couple years ago. And I was like, three of those teams win without a complete dickhead running the show. It's actually not impossible. You just believe, because you've seen it work, that it is. But you don't have to yell. You don't have to do all that. You don't have to slap someone to learn this lesson. You just need someone who understands the lesson well enough in themselves to teach it to somebody else.
Yeah. And like our other member of this band who's not here, David Thorpe, like he's always saying like leadership is breathing spirit into others, right? And so like in a manner, Jordan did that, but he definitely could have done that part way better, right? Like Horace Grant didn't dig it. You know what I mean? Like Scottie Pippen's still mad about it, right? I just feel like there's like there's a lot of aspects to leadership.
Also, and they aren't everyone, we are really this close in like talent. Like the 800th player in the world is like to the 20, like there's like 30 guys that really separate themselves, but everyone else is so close. You always think like, I'm better than this guy. Like I think that when you're on a team where like clearly one guy's being exalted as like if it's not for him, we're nothing. And that guy uses that to accrue like 10x the wealth of everyone else, to put down everyone else, to make sure no one else can grow. Now we're just talking a lot of people born women before in the that 70s. Like, it's just I don't know, Walmart, Citibank, corporate real estate. Cat Williams interview, like nothing is that different. It's just that's what they learned. This ruthlessness that is not necessary anymore.
Yeah. And it's not the most effective way, right? It's one way, right? But like, you know, that's not how Steph Curry works. You know, he's doing
well, but I would argue, right, in the Warrior sense, they run a balance of both, right? Because while Steph is the leader, that other part is Draymond, right? And that part is so necessary, right, for them to be good, right? So it's a balance of like, right, the joy that Steph breathes, right? But we also need this dog on the other side here too, right? And we're kind of, and maybe the imbalance is what causes them issues sometimes, right? When things implode, like last year and what have you.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that every team has a mix of guys, and you're going to have the dude to, you know, pressure. But we're talking about the true leaders. And if anything, I would say that, yeah, unpopular opinion. Draymond acting out like that is an indictment on Steph's leadership. Now, that the lessons and the fire that Draymond brings are important for the young players to learn, sure. But the big leader, the good leader, you know, these are painful lessons that Draymond is going to teach somebody.
Literally.
Like physically, mentally, emotionally. So the big leader contextualizes those lessons and says, like, I know that sucks, but, you know, like, he did that to me too. And now we're like, remember that, like, you know, we played the Pistons and ties it all together. And if you're not getting that, you get the constant pulling. It's a really difficult balance, especially after years. It's why you don't see dynasties. Like, people put up with stuff as long as it's working, and when it starts to break because it was never designed to last forever, you see all the pulling.
Well, there's just a very high-level athlete at their best is feeling very free, right? And like, I never watch football almost ever, but for family reasons, I did watch the Ravens this weekend, and Zay Flowers was like the entire offense. I don't know if you watched this game, but like, he's just, I mean, I think there was a moment where they put a little graphic on the screen that like Zay Flowers had like, I'm going to make it up like 111 yards of offense. And the whole rest of them combined had 37. It was something like this. And then he catches an incredible, you know, he's just this little dude weaving through everybody. And then he gets tackled short of the touchdown. I don't even know if I fairly come up with the word because I know it's a little bubble. And then he freaking like shoves the guy to the ground and spins the ball. And he's just kind of like, yeah, motherfucker, like whatever he said, right? And then he got a penalty. And like everybody where I was like, oh, you know, what a dumb shit. And I'm like, part of me was like, he's the whole fucking show, right? like no one else is doing, he's getting such an A on the test and he just got like 2 points off his like massive A plus, right? So on the one hand, I totally feel like Zay's running free. And when you're free, you might have a little bit of this, right? Mm-hmm. But I also feel like, you know, he's a rookie. I think he's a rookie. Like, of course he can complete that pass and make that run without also getting the penalty, right? It's totally doable, right? Like he can just dial it back a micron, I would imagine, you know, it's possible.
I really like your point. I sometimes think people like don't ask the right questions. Like, why is it a penalty in the first place? It's such a natural, sure you've asked that question, but it's like,
oh, that's racism for sure.
It's not just racism. Yeah. Racism is to me sits on top of economics. Like racism is a made up thing, right? It's like a 300-year-old thing in America, but or 500, whatever it is, but it's not. It doesn't exist the same in other places. I've been called the N-word in Korea. Was it racist? Did that person not know what they were doing and thinking they were talking to me like a rapper? But I think that like you're right. There's you know, if you're going to tell someone that they have to achieve something, the sports is like the ultimate like pin needle of like, to me, capitalism. Like show us my entire life in 3 seconds. That time I had to talk to my boss or I had to fight that bit, you know, whatever. I don't know. Like me and my girlfriend got into it and I had to overcome. Like, so if you tell someone like to keep hitting the tip of achievement all the time, that gets boring very fast, very, very fast because you're doing it. It's like, when you buy the car you always wanted, and then like a month later, you're like, all right, I got it. Like, dang, it's getting dirty. So does scoring a touchdown. So you're going to either have to like re-incentivize these people with something other than money, or people who watch the game are going to have to understand that money is an incentive to go somewhere, but it's not an incentive to stay anywhere. And these people are going to have to find fun and joy in it some other way. And legislating that out, well, that's someone else winning in a bottom line situation if they're doing that. It is not. It's not because some guy's just like racist, take out the dancing. It's like, oh, we've done the stats and a salute does 3 times better in the NFL than a jerk dance. So we're going to have to. None of this is an accident. Like, it's not even a conspiracy. It's just revisit any history. It's all about the money.
Well, there's just a frailty to sports fans that like blows my mind where. You know, if we go back to Babe Ruth or whatever, like mm-hmm. the real story is all about like, you know, sex and drugs and rock and roll, right? Like the way that he actually did this was like, it would make a really good like VH1 Behind the Music or whatever, mm-hmm. right? But in real time, we just unfortunately served up this like just JV journalism of horseshit of just like fits some Norman Rockwell view of America. And like, and we're still a little bit rocked by that. We're still like... Like, actually, this is like it's all your fault. Right? Like, you're the one who's like, there's sex in sports. And people are like, what? I don't think so. Like, probably not. Like, people are still really fuzzy about like how many kids Michael Jordan has. You know what I mean? And it's like, what? Like, come on. We're all adults here. Like, we can have a little touch of reality in our sports once in a while, can't we?
Yeah, I think it's like ties into just what America, like, again, I firmly believe that it's all tied together, but like, I don't know. Don't you think Vince McMahon would be Vince McMahon? Don't you think like Harvey Weinstein would be Harvey Weinstein? Like, not that like Michael Jordan's on that level of bad or anything like that. I just mean that when you create these like spaces where someone has infinite like growth and then the ability to like look backwards and say, I'm the best at it, it creates monsters. Yeah. Like, and the reason people who watch it don't get it is because they don't realize they have the same tendencies and they just haven't gotten there. You know, I've just seen so many people who like one day are broke, the next day have money, and they're doing all the same things they said they wouldn't do because it has nothing to do with those things being good or bad. It has to do with them. You always need more. And so it's easy to like, America sells us like, oh, these guys are perfect so that you can aspire to do it so we can keep going.
Right.
And you want to be the CEO, don't you? Because that's the boss, man. Look at all these perks. They don't say like, it's also kind of a, not that great life. Like, Michael Jordan does not have friends. I kick it with Jared Jeffries, and he claims they're friends, but their friendships seem to be like golfing and fishing, and Michael always wins. And I'm like, does that? It just sounds like you're kicking it around Michael Jordan sometimes.
That's the contract of being friends with Michael Jordan. He has to win at everything, always. He wins. Eh, he just wins. Okay, fine.
Yeah, that's kind of sad, really.
Very sad.
So you said, Rod, that you think that the way you talk from the inside of sports hurt your playing career. Did I interpret that right, what you said before we started recording?
Say that one more time.
So, like, talking openly and freely as you did, like, hurt your career?
Oh, definitely.
Like, how so? And please use the words Eric Musselman.
Shots fired.
Listen, it's funny because I did include Eric Musselman's name in the book, but what I didn't say is that he called me like 2 years later to try to get me to leave Korea to join the Bighorns again. And I was like, bro, you got to be kidding me. You got to be kidding me. But yeah, it's hard to quantify just how much the talking changed my trajectory. All I can go by is the emails that we got. I included some of them in the book, you know, 7 out of 100s. It's funny. It felt like it inspired you to go back and look at old emails. It's kind of fun to like try to just type in my agent's name and look at what people were saying back then. Like, it actually gave me more confidence. Like, dang, I was better than I thought I was. Because I was really like, I had to humble myself often when I wouldn't get called up. But it was all related to the fact that you can't have someone in a room who doesn't believe in the room. The more the money is. I mean, there's a reason I brought up Cat Williams. I'm like, I'm kind of in the same boat. I could have just played along and I'd be rich. As soon as like the first like, oh man, this is hurting your career. And I was like, that can't be true because I'm not doing anything weird. If I just listened to that, like I know a lot of people would. Maybe if I'd gone to church more, maybe like I'm serious. If I'd acted more like a black church man,
yeah.
Like
there's a formula for this. Yeah.
I'd probably be rich. And the reality is everyone who doesn't do those things doesn't make it to that level. I had to earn in Korea since none of those things mattered. There was no cap on my earnings. Only here is there a cap because it's going to force someone to admit that either they're bad at what they do, they're only doing it because of money, or they literally don't even like it. Like true, like the I don't know about not liking it in this case, but to wrap this up, when I left the D League, it was 2010. And I remember Ridiculous Upside did this long article, like it's sad Rod Benson's finally giving up on this, whatever. And listed all these reasons. And then 3 years later, the NBA hosted its first ever social media awards. And I was like, the money just needed to be figured out before people who can make it weird for other people got there. They used to say like, oh, one day you're going to write a tell-all book. That's why they can't let you in the room. And I'm like, I don't want to. My book exists because they made me, kind of. If people had just been regular, I wouldn't have to tell anything. I'm actually telling nothing. Like there's stories I could tell you. Like I've tried to make it so it's not about that. It's just about like, hey,
yeah.
If you're in this game, this is what it is. It's not. You're not like in control like you think. You're just kind of in this washing machine.
Yeah.
Cog in the wheel.
Yeah. No, I feel a little bit the same way, right? It's like there's like it's, you know, by and large, the powers that be in sports are like these billionaires, right? And one of the big reasons they get in the game is to look cooler, right? Like Mark Cuban without the Mavericks is such a right? Like he's a software salesperson, right? Like he's just like he's not invited to the party unless he's throwing the party, right? But as the owner of the Mavericks, he's kind of cool, right? So okay, that makes sense. But like you are a threat and I'm a threat to tell a story that might end up making Mark Cuban not look cool. In which case, not only does it hurt his investment a little, it actually upends the whole purpose of his investment, right? And now it's like, motherfucker, you are not going to come in here and make me look uncool. Like that's the whole project is to make Mark look cool. And like, it's very threatening.
I can tell you that there's so many, like just the way my life has gone, like very Forrest Gumpy. I've gone to like the end of like 10 different industries. At the end of all of them is someone who's scared that you're better than them and will just shut you down. Mm-hmm. You know, like I was, I, I brought up the social media awards because they were released, developed, and promoted right after the Players Tribune did the Derek Jeter "I'm retiring," which introduced kind of the world to athletes writing. Even though I was like, Derek Jeter definitely didn't write this. Like, as someone who is kind of bad at writing, I can tell when good writing doesn't come from one of us. I know what athletes write like. You're not better than me, Derek. You're not.
They should have a writing competition where you and Derek can go head to head.
Well, here's the real writing competition that I'm alluding to. Three years ago, I'm on the phone with, I had three phone interviews with the Players Tribune, And in the third interview, they're like, you know what? We just can't see how you fit in our business model. And I'm like, at this point, I was fully aware that they have all ghostwriters and no athlete has ever written one story. They're the Country Time Lemonade of journalism, I guess. But Country Time. I'm like, so, you know, after that, it was over. But I thought about it afterwards. Like, it wasn't that their business model couldn't support hiring another writer. It's that when you hire me and I do good, now what if other athletes can actually write? And they will do this job better. You can't have that. I need to keep my job. I'm a regular person who likes sports and likes media. And I have to stand between you and this because I need it. So nothing's real. So I have to send emails to people like, oh, can I get on your podcast? Because like people are scared that I'll say something that makes them look dumb. The Mark Cuban effect.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
Rod, you... No. I mean, this conversation has already been fascinating. It can go in a million different directions, and it already has. You know, you talked about earlier how you were, you know, how people are raised and the different things. That helps shape, right, who they are and how they interact. So I'd love to go back there. How important was your mother, your grandmother, I believe you also reference her in the book, into shaping this version of Rod, who's just so outspoken. And then I want you to tell the story about how, I think it was your mother, told you, don't marry no white girl like Kobe.
That was my grandmother. I'd actually like your opinion on that first. When you read my book, if you finished it or whatever, what impression did you get of my mom and grandmother in the book?
They, to me, are, I don't like to use the phrase, typical black mom and grandma, because that just, but... they do fit certain tropes that we all know that I'm like, yeah, no, I get it. Makes sense. So nothing was surprising to me. I was like, yeah, okay, this tracks.
Yeah.
This is what it is.
Yeah. I think that's, it's funny because writing a book like this, where I had to, you know, there's 120 stories in there. But anyone who's done editing, you know, what's on the floor. Like I have like 300 stories I had to remember. But when I started, I could remember like 10 and I'm like, you lived a whole life of basketball. Like, I was trying not to do something I already blogged about also, so that made it a little more difficult. But I had to teach myself how to remember my own past more accurately, better. Like,
how the hell did you do that?
What's up?
How did you do that? That's like no small project.
Well, first it was just like, okay, like your rookie year, like lock in on that year. What are some stories you remember? And it's like, dang, I only got like three. It's like, okay, what else happened in the year 2007 or whatever? Like look up historical events. Look at what movies came out. Look at what music came out, and then it's like, boom, poosh, explosion. And you do that going all the way back. You know, I wrote and finished the book like around June 8th. It was like done, and then since then tightening or adding or whatever. I didn't know all that I know now when I was processing all these memories. And I think that now that it's done and I've, you know, had a lot of more conversation, this whole book looks entirely different to me than when I finished it, because I have since found out through all this memorizing, through all these memories and then talking to people, like my mom and grandma were exactly what you thought they were. And my dad is actually the hero. I found this out 4 days ago. You know, my dad is not a deadbeat dad. My mom and grandma just like locked him out of my life. And like this whole book, all those negative things only happened because two people had a vision that 1,000 other people didn't have and didn't tell me about it ever.
Wait, what do you mean? Explain that.
Yeah.
I mean, as much as you want to.
It's cool. I mean, like you said, I've always been an open book. If I'm feeling something, I'm going to say it.
I do feel that, yeah.
Let me be specific here. This will contextualize a lot of the book for you. My mom and grandmother concocted a plan to trap my dad's family with a baby, me, and then immediately filed a bunch of restraining orders. This is like the 80s, so... You know, one in all the family court stuff. My grandma worked in the Child Protective Services or something like that. So,
insider
basically
knowledge.
Basically, just ran a bunch of scams. But I was raised, I was moved to San Diego and raised around all these white people. So it was just like confusing. Like, I'm like, oh, I guess we're better. We're also kind of raised anti-black as a result. And all these things led me to push that side of my family away. If you look at how I reference, how I talk about my dad, even in the book, it's not. But I didn't change it because I'm like, this is how I felt at the time when I was seeing it. Come to find out, literally like 2 weeks ago, a little less than that, it was all just a story they told me.
Wow. Holy crap.
How'd you find out?
Holy crap. Yeah, how'd you find out?
Basically, like I said, I finished the book in June. And then it was like tightening. And then it was when I decided to self-publish, I was basically just on my heels. Until like December 16th when I finally finished the audiobook. And then it was time to go home for Christmas. And I kind of just realized, you know, people who grew up in loving families know exactly what I'm about to say. And I never paid attention to it once. My book had now been out for about 10 days. Not my mom, not my brother, not my aunts, not a single person asked about it. And they knew they were aware of its existence. Meanwhile, I've been shutting out that other side of my family as annoying because they always ask me what's going on. Like, I'm like, stop talking to me. Like, you're stalkers. You're weird. And I sat there. I'm like, hold on. Let's review some of these messages. Like, hey, how are you feeling? How's your day? Like, and that really was the last, like, oh, damn.
These animals.
Just have the whole story backwards.
Wow, that is amazing. If you don't mind me asking, how old are you?
39.
At 39, you have this like totally different lens on your whole life. That's crazy.
And for the last like year and a half, 2 years, it's been that way. But this is like, I guess the final bit of fear and confusion I had to walk through. But the book exists as gently as it does because of the violence that went into it. That's why I say all the time, do you understand the violence it took to become this gentle? There are rough moments that I've learned that like, I wrote a letter to my whole family, like saying what I know now. Like I know, like I remember everything. Walking through that type of fear is different than going to play a basketball game in the Dominican Republic or having someone pull a gun out on you over a calculator. Like those things would be the stories that define someone else's whole life, but they're only because they're expected to. Like everyone else like understands that same pain. But like your personal struggle. Yeah. That one that no one else will understand is the biggest fear there is. And if you walk through that, if you can walk through that, I don't know, I could talk about it anywhere. I've had to talk about it with the hardest versions of it already. Who cares now?
Yeah. Yeah, like the thing that you would hide has already been unhidden, right? Like it's like, all right, might as well talk about it.
So have you started the process of like engaging with that side of the family now? Now when they text, how's it going? You're not like, okay, weirdo, stop bothering me.
Me and my dad have had 2 phone calls in the last week, and we have never had a phone call in our lives.
Oh my God.
What is that experience? Wow. Here's this person, because you are both adults, but a person you don't know. And you've had 2, I'm assuming, lengthy conversations with this person. What the fuck is that like?
It was, like I said, it was after I wrote the letter, so it was all easier. But it's just weird, man. It's weird. Just knowing, it's kind of like, because I guess I'm viewing it from his perspective, right? Any movie you watch where you think like the protagonist is lost and they win like super late, kind of. I'm like, it's like, wow, you really? And he was so nice and didn't say one negative thing about my mother or grandmother. Just gave me some history that I was sorely lacking, and it was beautiful. If anything, that's part of the balance, like reconnecting with these other family members and them like filling in the gaps. If there's one thing I think Different Dude does, is it kind of tells the story of like someone being in the wind. But I never really understood why I was such a windy person, why I would be so apt to make these choices and to turn left when everyone else is going right. Because I had like this duality sitting inside of me, and that's just starting to like untangle now in this beautiful way.
Are you going to meet him in person?
Yeah. Yeah, probably. Probably. I mean, I don't think he lives nearby. I mean, I guess we don't get to that, but I don't think he lives nearby.
That's conversation number three.
Wow. This might be your Hollywood story. Right, so. Like
the Rod Benson story. This is a movie right here.
Yeah, this seems, now we're talking about movie for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's not a movie producer.
It'd probably be a bad movie unless someone really understood how to make that universality apply.
Oh well, you need the right screenplay and director for sure. I mean, that has to happen, obviously. But someone can tell this story, and it might be you. You might have to write the screenplay, and then Zenry, you know a little bit about this whole process of this. Like, you'll write the screenplay, and then after that, it's going to get its chopped up and done whatever by the powers that be. But you make it clear. No, these are the factual moments that stay in here.
Well, let me reverse engineer that for you. I think all that could happen, but I think the general consciousness needs to be like ready for it. I do think Cat Williams started this. My thought when I finished the book, I'm like, wow, no one's ever said these things in this way. This could shift if enough sports fans get to it. Shift how even sports are discussed. And then I saw the Cat Williams interview, and I was like, this is the first domino. Because mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's the age of authenticity. Why were we taught to hide who we are? It's only allowed for all of these bad systems to be built on top of us. If we just start talking about what's actually happening, none of this can exist in as poor a fashion as it does.
Let's bring it on, man. I'm ready for that.
And I think, yeah. Henry, I don't know how you feel about this. I generally think that sports fans can handle more than what leagues and journalists think they can handle. I do. I think you can tell them the truth. Now, you might have to spoon feed them a little, but I think you can tell them the truth.
All right. So I think about it in, you guys would be cool with my weird analogy. All right. So let's say like writing is kind of like, reporting on something that's happening some other place where the reader isn't, right? So if you have like a really high quality satellite flying over, it sees all these little details, right? And like, so if you saw Babe Ruth in the satellite, you'd see like stuff that I'm not sure we want to put in the paper, right? But meanwhile, all of the biggest, best Hollywood successes or all the most read stories in sports journal history have that level of like sometimes tough to swallow, usually packed with struggle detail, right? So what's the story? Is that, do you like it simple or not? I think the answer is you do want all that shit in there, but it's very high degree of difficulty to tell it when you have all that in there, right? Like the poor man's version of whatever your favorite movie is, like an Oscar-winning movie sucks, right? It has to be told like amazingly well, right? So now it's like pressure on, maybe that like Andre Agassi book was one where they like, took the kinds of things we're talking about, and that ghostwriter guy, J.R. Moringer, is a genius.
Yeah,
it's and good he, like, stuff in there. Made that super detailed Agassi's kind of emotional outburst life into like page to page. It's fun, right? Like you're wrapped up in that, right? And I think 10,000,000% all of the sports fans' favorite stories have all the stuff like Jordan's illegitimate kids in those stories, right? But you have to do it just so, like you can't just dump it out there, right? You gotta, so like,
I'm gonna say, I think you can be a little more liberal with it. I watch a lot of like YouTube, and they're not all great journalists. Sometimes they just want to know what's happening. I turn that way to them. There was a show on FX, I forget what it was called, like a football show, like 20 years ago. Do you remember that show? It was an NFL show. God, I wish I remember the name of it. It was before Ballers, before all this. And it only...
Playmakers?
Let's take you back to that year. What was Playmakers playing?
That was on ESPN. Okay, okay, yeah. Oh, that, Henry, you know about that. You know about Playmakers.
Playmakers got canceled.
Yeah, because the NFL was like, get that show off the air.
It was killing in the ratings. That means...
But it was telling too many close to truths that the NFL didn't want out there.
You have to even consider then how can that even work? How can the NFL get this off? Now, it was on ESPN at the time. I don't think they were ABC. Mm-hmm. So I think that's part of it. But ESPN, if for the ratings to be that high and still pull it, someone had to say, you can never cross this. There's a line, and you just pushed it, and now we found it. And again, it has nothing to do with the athletes. The NFL, I think, is the biggest perpetrator of this because they have faceless players. So whoever they want to promote will be promoted. If someone can circumvent that, it's bad for them. They don't want that. They want to make it seem like this is the tight military ship. It is, I think, personally, our biggest military recruiting tool. It is our biggest, like foundation of like our capitalism outside of like the credit system. It cannot fall, even though it is falling. Football is actually losing in popularity. People don't even realize all these leagues are losing viewership. And it's not just to online because the product is getting worse. Every fourth play, there's someone in the NFL like laying on the ground doing this. And the only way to solve that is to play without helmets and pads. But then people will be like, oh, that's boring. And it's like, okay, well, then it has to die.
I mean, someone almost did die. Christ, like, right? That almost happened.
They have died all the time, just in the college level. And like, it's just going to keep going up with more cameras, people being faster, people being – but, again, it applies to every sport. And, again, if you know that guy's whole story when he's doing this, you might never watch again. Do you think his mom can watch again? I don't know. Maybe not. Because they know each other. You can't know those people. You can't. You can know the Shield. You can know the Kansas City Chiefs. And you can know Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce are dating. The fact that that's broadcast is not an accident. $500 million in revenue. Come on, man. Like, anybody who's played sports, the one thing you always hear them say, like, man, it's business at a certain age. But they never really tell you what they've learned about the business. Horrible, terrible things about the business is what I've heard. Because like every business.
I always think about the little logo, the little Fox animation is like a little robot with a helmet, right? Like this is the fantasy version, right? It's like these fuckers don't have feelings. They just go out there and crush, right? Like this is the military recruiting. This is the like, this is the, if they're working for you, the fans, they are not complainers. Right. Like they're just, you know, they're not delicate little ligaments and stuff. They're not like vertebrae that need to be stacked a certain way. Right. They're just like little robots that will just go crush for you. And if they get damaged, we'll just cart them off. Right.
Put a new robot in.
Maybe you'll see them. Maybe you won't. You know, just put them on the little cart. Yeah, get another one.
Yeah. I think that's starting to kill certain NFL positions that were like legacy positions because guys have maximized. Like the running back is just a robot now. There's like effectively, the fastest running back is going to be is like 4.4, and the slowest is going to be is like 4.5. And there's 10,000 people alive right now who can do that. So just put the next robot in. When the dude from, I think he got drafted in like the 7th round, but he was, at the time, he was just a cornerback from UConn. Did a standing broad jump at the combine that would have placed second at the Olympics or something. I was like, this is all so dumb. That person is maximized to become the 200th best cornerback in America, but he's already the second best standing broad jumper in the world.
Yeah.
That's what the NFL wants.
That's unbelievable.
Give us everything to this and nothing to yourself.
Yeah. And it's just like not a good system to care for those bodies, right? Like, I mean, obviously, but like I do think that sports, I mean, I'm writing this book right now, I'm almost done. It's like basically about preventing sports injuries. Mm-hmm. Don't get me started. I'll talk all day.
Talk all day.
But like we've been spoiled with just like an infinite supply of like the finest athletic bodies in the world just present themselves to these major American sports. Right. And it's like, so guess what? If you don't have to be good at managing them, cause there's another one and another one. And so like, everyone thinks like who is the story? Kyle Korver. Like when Kyle Korver was at Creighton, he had a lot of knee pain but he was borderline to get drafted. And so he's like, I'm just gonna, and they gave him all the regular like ibuprofen and ice and the little PT exercises or whatever, and it didn't help at all. And he was like, I'm just gonna bust a move for my next year of college, and then I'll make it to the NBA, and then they'll treat my body right. Like they'll be the experts, right? And like, and then he gets to the Sixers and he's like the 11th man, and everyone, like it's all like Derek Coleman and like all these old dudes, they need the training staff attention for real. Kyle like got a little bit of attention and got the same shit they recommended at Creighton. You know what I mean? And he's like, there was never, and it ended up going to the place my book's about and everything's better. Like, but I feel like there's like this kind of like this notion that they're going to be really good at like taking care of your ligaments, right? not a concern. They don't need to be your ligaments unless you're Shaq or something, right? Like, we don't need those legs. We just need legs.
Yeah,
pretty much. You read the injury story, I forget what I titled it. Jordan 11, actually, it's titled in my book. Did you, or if you got to it, I don't know. Did that resonate with you? It was like, it's just all about being injured.
Refresh me a little bit. My memory is so crap.
I just told a story of like a bunch of different injuries. Like, you know, I took a shot at halftime in college when my knee, I took a hit. I took a shot and I didn't play in the second half. Then the next day, I forgot I took the shot when I woke up and I like fell out of bed. Like I couldn't walk. And I was like, dang, like,
wow. Okay.
Was the shot preventing me from feeling this? And then like years later, I mean, the story kind of ends with me saying that, you know, everybody's right and everybody's wrong. And, you know, my last one, 2017, 2018, I was in Korea. I had this foot injury and no one could figure it out. And I, you know, the team trainers, all the trainers, the local hospital, then they started shipping me off to like, because this is during the playoffs. Like I got time to get a replacement. Taking the train and like cars up and down the Korean peninsula, like seeing like the finest foot doctors on earth, MRIs, all this, like they can all see what's wrong. They just don't know what's causing it. Hmm. And the team's ready to cut me, all this stuff. And then my teammate one day is like, in Korean, have you tried switching your shoes? I think the Jordan 11 is not working for you. Immediately fine. Smart guy. Immediately fine. And it's like, there is no right or wrong. It's like, Do you want to be a bitch or not? Like, that's it. Like, today I'm a bitch. I need to sit out. I don't understand what's happening until I do.
Do you want to be?
There's so much dumb stuff. Grant Hill's talked about, I don't know if you've heard these Grant Hill talking about his like early days in Detroit, but like, you know, he had ankle issues and happened to play for the Pistons, where like the greatest bit of sports heroism in the history of the franchise was Isaiah Thomas played on like the finals. He played on a totally messed up ankle. Right. And so like they kind of had baked in the training staff and the coaching staff and the fans, like basically like, God damn it. You got through ankle issues, right? You'll sit out with ankle issues. Even though I would point out, I went and looked it up. I had to remind myself, but like Isaiah Thomas, like, lost the finals by doing that.
Correct.
Like they were ahead in game six, and then he played with his fucked up body all the remaining minutes, and they lost. it was especially stupid. So Grant, I mean, long story short, Grant says like he was handled in barbaric ways and like ended up actually on opioids in the playoffs with what later proved to be a broken ankle. He was playing like because they were just telling them to be tough. And it's like, if you know, there's a job which is figuring out what's wrong with Grant's ankle, right? People have that job. It's like, that person was not fired, right? It's like, how can you send this dude out there with a broken fucking ankle and like, and he gets people shit on him, right?
Because he's not,
and then he gave him a free agent left, but this person, no one even questions. Like,
yeah, I used to, you never hear anymore. Part because of medical technology, but. Part because people don't do stuff like that anymore. Like that crazy 80s style training is, you'd see someone and be like, oh, I tore up my knee. Had to stop. Like, you know, I'll play four tore years, up tore my knee. It's like, you know, I tore up my knee. It's like, there is you probably hurt your knee. And then there's all the military inspired men around you all came back from Vietnam and World War II as the only coaches telling you, tore up knee. Charlie don't know nothing about no tore up knee. Get back out there.
Yeah. It's wild. I mean, I, the times are changing, as you suggest, right? Like, if there's nothing you can do, if you're in the jungle in Vietnam and something happened to your knee, right? Like, well, what we're going to do is we're going to try to get you out of here.
Right.
And then we're going to put you on a plane home and then you're going to limp around. Like, there's nothing to do, right? But now there's a lot to do, right? Like, we have a lot of things we can do. We could even figure out what's wrong with your knee, right? So now it's like a little bit, I think maybe the sports fans have the idea that like this, the player's soft because they're like, you know, dealing with this inflamed knee and they want to rest. But it's like, yeah, it's not the same as the NOM approach. Well, but
let me go the other way on that too. I think it's worth noting that like, I think younger players are a little softer, but not like soft how guys say it. Like, man, you soft.
They're confusing. They're trying to fuck it up for all of us. I'm trying to like get you to a good doctor, and they're like, "Ah, it hurts." I'm like, "Oh Jesus, shut up for a second."
I brought up Japanese baseball earlier. Do you follow that at all? It's a random, but they're the best in the world at baseball right now. They have not lost the World Baseball Classic in 12 years. They keep a lot of their domestic players who make more money than they would make here until like Ohtani, basically. But in, dang, what were we just talking about? I got lost in the Ohtani thing.
It's injuries. Injuries.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Young players are soft.
So in the Japanese, why they're so good is because their kids go dumb hard. And I saw this in Korea, too. Korea goes equally as hard. I'm just using the Japanese example. High school kids will pitch 300 pitches in a session, like 4 days a week. So if you're a high school player in California, you can only pitch by law like 110 pitches a week. In Japan, there is no limit. And further, they have this really big tournament where like where legends are made. Like all the Japanese stars we know all like became legends in this tournament. And they'll play through crazy injuries. And some of the like we focus on the pitchers more because they're the ones who get the shoulder injuries, but they'll pitch 700 pitches in like 4 days, starting each game. Something we would never think of. Now, when you look at the data of injuries from the pro level in Japan, the college level, and the high school level, it's all less than ours. Now, when they do get messed up, the way they get messed up is because they pitch through. If you pitch 700 pitches and now your arm is done, they need someone to be like, stop, but that's not really the Japanese way. But even still, they have less injuries than us. There is a point where your body's going to hurt and you have to keep going. And that's why I said it really just matters if you want to be a bitch or not, because we only understand pain insofar as by comparison to other pain we've had. And you don't know what your body's doing. You just feel things and it's scary. So there is something to developing early enough to handle that and to know yourself better than to like play it safe your whole life. And then now you're just injured all the time because you don't even understand if you're injured or not.
Well, this is, Henry, this is going to be in your book, I'm sure, right? Because Marcus, big thing, Marcus Elliott, who everyone in this podcast who listens to
it. Did you ever go to P3, Rod? Do you know what P3 is in Santa Barbara?
I've heard of it. I was recommended to go there when I had knee pain by the Utah coach back in 2008.
And do you know Mark McCown?
That might be who that was. I don't know. It's been a long time.
He was the Utah trainer who was super, he's a crazy, big, huge, tall white guy.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. It's like, you gotta go down to Santa Barbara. I'm like, I'm on a D-League contract, sir. I'm
gonna fly to Santa Barbara and see a special. Go to Santa Barbara. But Henry is gonna be in your book, right? Marcus, because Marcus's thing is not, it's not just, oh, guys are tired, give them rest, right? It's not, that's not, yes, they need rest, but there's more to it than just rest.
See, I'm trying not to make this whole thing about my book. I think the big shift here is like, if you're injured now, any of us, they're going to make you lie still in a machine and they're going to do a scan. But the injury was caused by how you move. So like, and the fix, it might be how you move too, right? Like, so we all move very differently. You know, there's physics to all this stuff, right? And like, so this place is trying to get into the physics of like, okay, well, Rod, the exact way you land is putting this 40% added stress on your left ACL. And so we're going to fix that with this movement you're going to do over here, right? And on through your bodies, right? So like this same thing happened with our hearts where, you know, we used to be like, oh my God, he was struck down for thinking evil thoughts and he's dead. But then they had the echocardiogram and they could be like, oh, this is how the blood moves through your heart and your arteries constrict over time. And like, it's about the movement of the thing, right? Like, and you can affect that movement 10 years before you have the heart attack, right? So same thing with your ACL tear, same with your Achilles tear, with your quad strain, whatever, hamstring strain, lower back pain. Like they telegraph themselves a little bit before, because I would argue we've just been looking at the wrong data the whole time, right? We're just, injuries seem like they're coming from outer space because we are looking at the wrong stuff, right? We're so confused about what causes injuries. And so I think it's all going to be very different in the future. But for now, we're like, I tore my knee up.
I think that there's like, you know, having been around guys who are continually injured versus guys who aren't. To me, it's really like some of that stuff is a little, someone has to sell it. So, hey, we're all selling tech. If we can explain the tech, great. But I didn't have to go to Santa Barbara. I just had to do some like leg extensions when I got to Korea. Like almost like what you said, like Kyle Korver said, when I get here, I'm going to get better care. Because Korea has a whole different like idea of healthcare, of how to take care of your body.
Yeah.
I actually like upgraded very quickly out there that I wasn't doing here. Because America had started going to like resistance band training. And I'm not saying that's bad. It was just, it was a fad that I think we can look back on and say like, some of the Olympic stuff was important because we lost that. Yeah. What example did you just give? Because it was you had a good one. John,
movement.
The story you just told, John. I'm sorry.
That I told?
No. The Henry Hill. Sorry.
Oh, was it about a particular player? This is like
just a second ago. The last
podcast
thing
listeners, you were listening to Aging Men.
No. That's what's happening right now.
The P3 story.
Oh, yeah, the P3. So yeah, but all I can say, because I was there and I met the dude who was telling me to do P3 and all that. And then I went to Korea.
Yeah.
And it became very clear to me very quickly that the only way guys get injured a lot is by playing so recklessly that they force injuries upon themselves. We're also seeing an uptick in injuries in the NBA because of freedom of movement. Like before 2018, there were so many less wrist injuries. But now you got guys, John Morant trying to take off from 30 feet to dunk over someone who's been standing there for like 9 whole seconds, like just waiting and falling on himself. I used to watch Derrick Rose and I'd be like, bro, how is that possible? Because he would do jump stops from like the elbow and land like on the block with 2 feet. I'm like, the force it takes just to stop that is impossible. Anthony Davis falls down every 3 seconds and every Laker. It's always when we go on like a 6 game winning streak. Anthony Davis just fall down. And everyone's like, and he's okay. Oh my God, he's okay. Like, you don't just fall down like that unless you're like trying to get calls. You've learned this angle. Like, guys could also just change how they play. They don't want to. They don't have to anymore. Just pay me $500 million because I did one move no one else can do. And then change the rule. I don't care. Whatever. I'm James Harden. Like, nobody cares anymore.
To me, the movement role models are wild animals. Like, it really kind of came clear. Like, you know, like an owl, like it has to go catch something or die. Right. And owls don't make nests. They just steal them, often from bigger birds. And they're just like, come get me, you know, like, but they have to move and they're not limping around. You know what I mean? Like, they just kick every ass they have to kick, right? Like they just go like win every little fight, no complaints. And they're just like live 30 years and they're all like trim and lean and just.
What kind of owls you been following, my guy? You got the owl calendar?
Check it out, man.
Owls are pretty serious, man. They are.
They got it all wrong. I thought too much about owls, Rob. But they put them on like the nature documentary with like classical music. Like they're like that's not what they're like at all. There's a great one where like if they can't steal somebody's nest, they just lay the babies right on the ground and they're just like, and there's literally like nature documentary of like the wolves in Alaska are like, oh, there's like, you know, 10-inch tall owl babies on the ground over there. Let's go eat those owl babies. And the parents are like, oh, look at these dumbasses. And like, and they like, by the end of the video, the wolves are like, Jesus, stop! It's like running away. Because the owl parents are just like, we got so many ways to hurt you. Anyway, so that's an athlete, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm like, you want to kind of move like that, right? And like, is there any part of that owl that's like, ooh, it's chilly today. You know, or I think I might have scratched my leg. Like, to your point, like, yeah, you got to be this crazy tough, right? Crazy tough.
Well, I'm picturing as like, you say that, like,
tougher than anybody.
Just, you know, FIBA basketball versus NBA basketball. It's why you're starting to see all the best players come out of Europe because they're like the owls. When I was out there, it was actually wild how big these dudes were. I remember being like, I'm sorry, if like I'm good at this there. This is so much harder. This is crazy harder. I was in the EuroLeague in Olympiakos. No, Panathinaikos was in our pool and they had I forget his first name. His last name is Pekovic. I want to say he was on the Wolves for a little bit.
He's a huge dude.
I don't know. I didn't know this guy. You didn't hear of him. This was 2009. We're just in France.
Yeah.
Bro, it took every ounce of like my life force to stop this dude from moving like 6 inches. And he finished with like 8-8, which in a EuroLeague game is like 30-30. I was embarrassed. Yeah. That I couldn't do shit with that guy in an 8-8 game. And that's like, that's what's missing. It's like the owls they are developing. Every country I go to has their own, like the best player in Puerto Rico doesn't play like Steph Curry. He has like some weird like underhand scoop thing that doesn't make sense. And it's off pace. It's like a changeup. But could easily, if everyone just learned that style, could be what we call basketball.
Yeah, right.
The NBA has like flattened into like, it's this or this. But you go to like Greece, you go to Taiwan, you go to Dominican. There's some dude doing something. You're like, whoa, if everybody did that, that'd be crazy. You go to some country, like, well, if everyone was that big, it'd be crazy. Wait, are the French really this athletic? They mimic us. That'd be crazy if they had the same infrastructure. Yeah. We're falling behind because we're the wolves who think, oh, house on the ground. There's $1 billion. Like, no, I'm about to get ate up. Oh, my
God. And we've come full circle. Owls on the ground. There go the wolves.
Callback came.
Rod, this has been a pleasure. Tell people where they can find you, first of all, if they want to, like, follow you on socials if you're there.
Or your clothing that kind
of
thing. Line.
Yeah, well, first of all, the book is called Different Dude. You can get it at differentdude.com or just, like, anywhere you buy books. I wouldn't recommend Amazon. They're kind of punks. The audiobook is also everywhere, but you can listen to it for free on Spotify. I don't understand their business model. I don't have to. I still get paid.
Love it. We love it.
And then on social, it's my middle name, Zsorryon. I know that's hard, but at Gerion.
Do one more time.
Zsorryon. Everywhere.
Okay.
On all the spaces, Threads. If you talk to me, I'll talk to you back. Holler.
Look at that, man. All right, guys. This was a pleasure. And we will see you later in the week. Take care.